Welcome to episode 154 of Sports Clicks and Politics. I am Sean Hannan, joined as always by the charming and handsome Mr. Ben Huesong. Mr. Ben Huesong, how was your weekend?
It was great.
Great?
Sure. We did the anniversary party for Charlie's Ice Cream on Saturday.
Oh, anniversary? What year anniversary?
This will be, we just completed our third year of operations, so.
Nothing like opening up right in the middle of a pandemic. Good job, folks. Sorry.
Long COVID, sorry.
Yeah.
No, it was good. Yeah, opened in the middle of the pandemic, back when masks were a thing. That was a fun time. But yeah, we did a bunch of stuff. A bunch of customers came in. We did some specials. Had Easter Bunny, egg hunt, nailed it challenge, the whole nine yards. So I spent Saturday coaching baseball and then at the ice cream shop for the rest of the day.
Didn't it snow Saturday?
Sure, a lot. Yeah, oh. Sure. It was a great day for it. Perfect, perfect weather. All the way around.
What the hell are you doing?
No, but we did all that, and it was
you don't
fun.
Have four-season baseball fields yet for the Little League team?
Well, I mean, we got indoor facilities. That's where we did the practice on Saturday morning. Actually, so we were inside and did all that. But, yeah.
Slackers.
I mean, I know. What the hell? It's good. Sunday was a much more relaxing day because I was exhausted, but I did get a little work done in the upstairs bathroom is the project du jour. Hmm. So how about you?
Thrifting.
Nice.
Did you see I did. I showed you the new with tags, Levi's mustard yellow 501XX
42. 34.
34 are they? Nice size too, actually.
42, 34.
And 40, 34s. I have two pairs.
Okay.
New with tags.
I'm a level with you. They're pretty ugly.
I know. That's why they're going to be sold.
Just checking. Yeah. Want to make sure we're on the same page there. They're awesome. Like, somebody would want them because they are so terribly.
Listen, I walked around wonderful. To the pants section, and I immediately pulled them off, and I was like, all right, these are coming home with me.
That's awesome. So, good for you. That.
Yeah. Well,
I love that you're into thrifting.
I know. Where'd that come from?
I don't know. That's random.
Well, I could go back to a story of the Mr. Lister days, but nobody wants to be bored by that.
I don't know what Mr. Lister is.
I know.
All right.
Well, in 2005, I'll give you the TLDR version. In 2005, I helped operate a eBay reselling store. So people would bring us stuff, we would sell it, take a commission, and give them the rest.
Got it.
Yeah. So it's a rekindling of some of those years a little bit.
Fair enough.
But I blame the missus.
I mean, it's clearly her fault.
She drags me along.
Obviously.
She's like, I don't want to go here alone. Will you come with me? And then I'm like, I stand there, stare at jewelry.
And belt.
So buckles. Now I started reading books. Look at the, you covered up the books that I got at an estate sale.
My bad.
They're all from the 1800s history books.
Awesome.
All right, well, I forgot to remind everybody to like the show, share the video, subscribe to the channel, and all that good stuff, but I just remembered, so we're good.
Early enough. I don't think that counts as forgetting.
Did you watch any golf this weekend? Only because I know I was peppering you with golf information, so I was wondering if you were watching it.
I mean, I did watch almost 15 full seconds of golf this weekend.
Did you see any of my boy Kevin Ryan? Or Kevin Ryan. Your boy Kevin
Shout
Ryan.
Shout out Kevin Ryan.
Kevin Ryan, you're in the house.
Former guest of the show.
Yes. A different Bellevue member, Kevin Roy.
Yes. Great weekend for him.
Yeah, I think the cash of like $200K.
$167,000.
Nice. I mean, before taxes, I guess, probably.
You know.
But not bad for, you know, sponsors exemption. Hadn't played on the tour all year. Busts in there. Actually was leading the tournament.
Yeah.
After one hole in the second round, which is pretty fun.
I mean.
I took a screenshot of it, so I'll probably text his dad with that. I forgot.
That's great.
Yeah.
That was a cool thing.
Did I tell you?
Him.
You know his dad gave me swing lessons, right?
And you did tell me this.
So I'm a natural.
Obviously. He saw something in you, took a special interest, so maybe he's not the greatest.
If you remember, I also heckled him because he played in the Honda Classic, and his dad was the caddy, and I heckled him from the green side at number six. And was like, Bellevue in the house! And he turned and ordered a one iron. But anyway.
Love it.
You know what we got coming up? Are you going to be watching the Masters?
Yes, I will watch some of the Masters.
Yeah, Masters is pretty cool. You know what I did here?
What'd you do here?
Let's look at Jon Rahm's food menu for the Masters, because you know how the previous past champions get to pick the menu for the dinner? So, you know, Jon Rahm, Spanish, picks tapas. Everybody's mad now.
Pretty confident it's pronounced tapas.
Yeah, whatever.
Not tapas.
Sounds racist to me.
Tapas does sound kind of racist.
Yeah, well, that's what tapas. I am. I'm uncultured.
You are.
I'm uncultured tapas. So, I'm not going to try to pronounce any of this stuff here, but it's a bunch of small plates, right?
Yeah, tapas literally translates to small plates.
Yeah. Anything good there? I can't zoom it in any farther. I apologize. Tortilla de patatas. Okay. So, I mean, you know, healthy-ish, maybe? I don't know.
Chicken dish on there. That's beans.
Beans? Chicken dish?
No, the second, the bottom middle.
And yeah, nobody can hear you, so I'm repeating your words.
Sorry.
ensalado de tecoro. All right.
All right. Well, here, so what do you think about some of these other past dinners here? So let me read some of these to you here. Let me pull it up on my end so you don't have to strain your eyeballs.
Sorry.
No, this will help you, I think. So last year, Scottie Scheffler, American, uncultured American, guess what he had?
Chicken fingers. Chicken tenders.
Cheeseburger sliders. Firecracker shrimp.
Yes.
Tortilla soup.
Sure.
A Texas ribeye or a blackened redfish. And then warm chocolate chip skillet. Kind of like, you know.
Texas Roadhouse?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Like, yeah. I want to pick any other, what do you think, some of these other places? And what about Hideki Matsuyama?
I'm going to guess fish.
He won in 2022. What do you think his menu consisted of?
Some tempura, some sushi.
Appetizers, assorted sushi, bam! Sashimi, and nigiri.
There it is.
I'm making up words now.
No, those you actually did.
Yakitori
right.
Chicken skewers, miso glazed black cod.
I was going to guess miso.
I almost said a bad word right there. Miyazaki Wagyu.
Ooh, good beef.
And Japanese strawberry shortcake. So I just kind of, you know, weird, because you have such international flavor at the Masters here that you get, you know, crazy menus.
Listen, I'm going to.
Imagine being the chef and you're like, oh, this guy again? Oh, my God. I got to make cheeseburger sliders?
I know.
It's probably beneath the people in that kitchen. We're like, what the hell?
No, I think it's a special way of doing it. All right, so.
A special way of making cheeseburger sliders. Ooh.
Yeah, on a brioche roll.
Ooh, I got brioche rolls. You got brioche in my kitchen.
I'm just saying, you can do some stuff. Yeah, I kind of love it. And here's the thing. If people are upset about tapas, don't be. Tapas is fantastic. Like, it's just smaller portions. You can get more. All right? Like, we don't have to go crazy. I enjoy tapas. I think it's great. I think it's a great concept because in Spain, when they do it, the tapas is free. They just give you food so that you drink more. It's actually a brilliant concept. In America, we turn that into you get popcorn at some bars. Like, we Americanize the hell out of it.
We peanuts on the floor?
Peanuts or popcorn. Like, we can't spend money on real food. Yeah. Let's give the saltiest thing imaginable to these schlebs and make them drink more beer.
Exactly.
Brilliant. I can't argue with the logic.
All right. So let's stay on sports. Two topics on sports, because, I don't know, we just talked about food and somehow that's sports related. But we didn't really talk about free agency that kind of all transpired while we were away.
Yep.
I'm not looking for like grades from you.
I can't give you
good grades. But like, do you have like initial thoughts on, I don't know, let's say the Bills?
Mitch Trubisky? I mean, I like that they brought Trubisky back. He's a good backup quarterback. I think that was a smart move. I do think also Curtis Samuel, like, don't love. I guess the money's right for him.
Who is the white dude who's anti-vax? Cole Beasley. He's Cole Beasley.
Yeah, but he's black, so he's right, probably faster.
I mean, they're the same guy. I mean, maybe, but they're the same underneath, catch the ball 3 yards and make a guy miss and, you know, whatever.
I got it. And Gabe Davis is gone, so you want
to. And he'll be open. I mean, Samuel will be open. It's like Beasley was always open.
And my understanding is Samuel's a pretty good blocker, so that's good. I love that they re-signed Epinesa. I can't say his name. Let me see what else. Daquan Jones was good for a re-sign. I like that one. I'm sorry to see the safeties go, Poyer and Hyde, but the time had come, and realistically, they were going to command more money than what it would have been worth for the Bills to keep them. Taylor Rapp, solid enough. I hope that, I mean, Taron Johnson is a great nickel cornerback, so I'm glad they held on to him, and I hope that Tre'Davious White ends up coming back, just not for the kind of money he wants.
All right, well then, because
he's missed the last two seasons with injury. Like,
so, again, I'm not asking you for grades, but do you think the Bills are a better team than they were last year?
As of right now?
Yeah.
No. But listen, they were in cap hell. They had to change around a bunch of stuff. Von Miller restructured and took a hit. Josh Allen restructured. So, they were in a bad situation. So, the idea that they were immediately going to come out and be like, all right, perfect. They just didn't have the cap space. Now, Brandon Bean typically does well in drafts, so let's see what he does. I think going into the season, will they probably be a better team? It'll be close.
And so what about the rest of your little division there? So New York Jets, Miami Dolphins. I mean, Patriots are kind of rebuild mode, so I'm not worried about them right now. But I don't know. With a Aaron Rodgers-led Jets, will They signed Mike Williams.
They signed Mike Williams, and they signed the left tackle from Dallas. Tyron.
I have Tyron Smith.
Tyron Smith. Yeah, thank you. That's his name. So, yeah, they got him, and he's a good left tackle. So I think that'll bolster their line, hopefully.
Yeah, it looks like they signed three offensive John Simpson.
They still got a draft.
Yeah.
So they'll probably get something out of that. And I do think they'll be better because, God forbid, like if Aaron Rodgers goes out for the season on the first series again this year, everybody in the Jets front office should get fired.
I mean, and so I guess everybody's chasing Baltimore then? Do you think they're the best team?
I don't.
Not even with the Derrick Henry signing?
I mean, that's great, but he's a huge guy. He's a good get. But 5 years ago, Derrick Henry would have made me a little more nervous.
Well, it's not like they're going to lean on him. They have Lamar Jackson, right?
They do have Lamar Jackson. And listen, I think Lamar Jackson is a very good quarterback. I don't think he belongs in the conversation of the elite, top-of-the-league guys who, when the game is on the line and you got to come back and everybody knows you're throwing, can you place the ball where it needs to be? And I don't think he fits that. So, Baltimore has never made me terribly nervous as a deep playoff slash Super Bowl team. Is it possible? Yes. They're very talented. They're very good. And I don't mean any hate on Lamar Jackson. He's phenomenal. Like he's one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the league, no question. Their receivers don't make me terribly nervous. So it's one of those teams where it's like, no, I mean you could, but I have a feeling you're a playoff team who's then gonna get bounced later in the playoffs.
So then is it the Chiefs?
I think the Chiefs are, you got to knock
Marquise
out the
Brown
champ.
Signing?
You got to knock out the champ. Look, I don't
he can catch the ball at least.
I don't care who they have. As long as they have Andy Reid, Pagano, Spagnuolo. And obviously Patrick Mahomes, they're the team to beat until otherwise. As long as that core is still in there, and you know, obviously Kelsey's a big part of it. As long as they have that, they're the team to beat, in my opinion, in the AFC. Probably in the entire NFL.
Okay. So then let's end. We're not going to do anything in the NFC unless there's something you really want to think. We'll just end on the Steelers because that's, I feel like, the crazy of all the shuffles that Steelers kind of made the craziest. But
yeah. Did I call Justin Fields to Pittsburgh or did I call Justin Fields to Pittsburgh?
Did you place any money on it?
No.
Oh, well.
I don't gamble much.
So, yeah, Justin Fields and Russell Wilson. Somehow they got both for nothing.
I mean, they're paying Russell Wilson like $1.3 million.
They could easily just cut him if Justin Fields just kills it. Because of what you just pointed out, like they have nothing invested in Russell Wilson because Denver's still paying a bajillion dollars.
Right. Yeah.
And then they get Justin Fields for basically a seventh rounder.
I know. And good for Chicago because they allegedly they did have better offers, but they asked Justin Fields where he wanted to go, and he wanted to go to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that seems like a good cop out. So, sure, it seems like some cope because I don't think the market for Justin Fields was anything.
I think that a reasonable market for Justin Fields would have been a fourth or a fifth round draft pick. That's it. Like
right.
I wouldn't have gone any higher.
The Steelers, it would end up a fourth round pick if he plays like 51% of the snaps or something or whatever. So, and even if that's the scenario, then probably benefits for Steelers because they got their starting quarterback for a fourth rounder.
Right.
That being said, neither one of these guys are on contract for next year. The Steelers would have to pay Fields $25 million to re-up for, you know, he's got a player option year left or whatever. He got 1 year left in his rookie contract deal. Where they can sign him, they can keep him. But it's $25 million. So
$25 million is not bad for if he's a legitimate quarterback, which again, same idea of like, look, he's dominant. It's unbelievable how talented and athletic he is. But like at the same point, I'm still the old fashioned of, I think if you're going to win multiple Super Bowl threats, you got to have somebody that if they can run, great. But if the first thing you think about is the running, I don't think that's your guy. So Patrick Mahomes is a great runner. Josh Allen's a great runner. Herbert's a pretty good runner. A lot of these guys are good, but it's not what gets it done. What gets it done is, can you throw? Can you hit the guy when everybody knows you're throwing? Can you stand back there with the rush coming at you and deliver a ball on target? That's the litmus test for me.
Yeah. Clearly, his throwing the ball in accuracy is not his strongest suit, but you know he's had like three different offensive coordinators in 4 years, too, so like who knows?
I mean, listen,
the Steelers, you cannot say they didn't. They clearly won. Every move they made, they won.
For sure.
Because they had, there's no risk. Like, whatever they offered, I mean, the only risk is Kenny Pickett turns into Joe Montana, right? Which is highly unlikely.
I think so, we call that low right. risk.
Very low risk. So, yeah, I mean, I don't want to be like Steelers are, you know, Super Bowl bound or whatever, but like they have a better quarterback group than they did last year. They won 10 games last year with smoke and mirrors.
They're a better team now than they were last year. I would say that right
and
now.
And they added Patrick Queen from Baltimore, you know, which is a, you know, so addition to us and subtraction to them. So, I mean, it's a bonus. They did get rid of Deontay Johnson because him and George Pickens don't really like each other. So they just shipped him out to Carolina for a starting DB. So who knows? I don't know.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, I saw somebody else make this comment. It's like, it's rare that all of sports media agrees on any one thing ever. And everybody's like, the Steelers, like, won with nothing. They won with no risk, and they totally changed up their team. So
yeah, it's all upside, very little risk to it. And listen, worst case scenario, they're going to be very comparable to what they were this past season, which if they get a little lucky results in a playoff berth, if they get unlucky, then they just miss the playoffs.
Well, they got, you know, apparently they got this new GM, Omar Khan, who, you know, came in, shook things up, and we'll see. I mean, it's better, and I agree. I mean, I think the NFL, you can turn around in 1 year. So, like, it's better to pull the plug on something you don't think is going to work. If Kenny Pickett, for example, is that, or the Chicago Bears think Fields is not going to, whatever. Pull the plug, start over, and you can get going back in a couple of years. So, I don't know.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see how it all plays out. I mean, the draft, when's the draft? You know when the draft is? It's got to be April, right?
April. I don't know when it is.
Yeah, I don't know either. But
end of April, probably.
And don't ask me to do any combine stuff. I don't know anything about any of that stuff.
I'm right there with you.
I hope the Steelers draft, you know, somebody in the first round to complement their quarterbacks, I guess. That's all I can say. Maybe a receiver. All right. So let's talk about ivermectin, since now we probably won't get banned. I think I got the FDA ivermectin settlement. So Dr. Pierre Corey, there was a couple other people, but Ralph Barrick actually was the person for the FLCC who was representing the FLCC. But Pierre Corey is somebody who I think we've talked about on this show. Very prominent advocate for ivermectin for use with for treating COVID, right? And so the FDA settled, this is Pierre Corey's medical musings on Substack. The FDA settled with us because they knew they were going to lose. After 4 years of catastrophic health agency tyranny, physicians finally score a legal victory. I think the FDA settled because their pharma masters were terrified of discovery. Here is the backstory. So I shared this link in the show notes so you can kind of go read Pierre Corey's medical musings here on this. This was from March 22nd. So as I kind of hinted at, we had at least three, maybe four episodes of our YouTube channel. Pretty much ivermectin was the reason why we stopped. For all the other things, the Hunter Biden laptop, all the craziness, all the other crazy stuff we talked about, It was the ivermectin stuff that got all of our YouTube channel taken down and videos removed. So I'm not saying vindication by any means, but I'm not going to broadcast this on YouTube either because, you know, I'm not sure or whatever. But you know what I did? Let's check out here because I have not looked at this yet, but let's find out. So part of the settlement, and maybe you'll get a kick out of this, Mr. Hewsong, but part of the settlement was that they had to remove. So the gist of the lawsuit was that the FDA was not a medical doctor and should not be putting their thumb on the scales of medical treatment advice, right? And so that was the famous post of, you're not a horse, you're not a cow.
Seriously,
you
know,
stop y'all, it. Whatever it is, right? And so the lawsuit stemmed from those type of, call them propaganda piece, tweets or whatever, basically saying that FDA overstepped its authority or whatever, and that they shouldn't be allowed to, you know, again, put the thumb on the scale. So when you look, I don't know if the post is still there or not. Not right now. So I did look earlier, and it was there. Let me click this on my home computer here and see if it's still up there. But it was up. Do you think part of the settlement is that they have to wait 75 years before they remove the post?
No, this is not as long as producing 77,000 pages of PDF. So they'll probably only need about 7 years to take this down.
7 years. Okay. Because it was still up this morning. So I'm assuming that it's still up and, you know, because whatever the settlement is, probably still T's haven't been crossed and I's haven't been dotted or whatnot. But I don't even know what to say about it, really. I mean, it's just something that never should have happened, let's just say. And the fact that People weren't allowed to even experiment or try with this stuff, which is, you know, one of the most safest drugs on the market in the history of markets, that there seems to be something more at play. That was kind of our contention from the beginning, I think.
I think my contention on ivermectin, and I think I was relatively consistent on this. I mean, I probably overstated it or understated it as new studies were coming out left, right, and center from, you know, the FDA never had one that said it did any good, and some foreign one said it was very good. It's somewhere, no definitive thing. I think our general take was, all right, there's literally no side effects that are known to this particular medication. It's the safest medication that probably has ever been produced by a pharmaceutical company. Won the Nobel Prize, has had some, it was an anti-parasitic drug, but had some antiviral properties in the past that we had seen. And so it was a question of the risk and the reward. And for some people, and I'll still maintain this, I understand that the studies are more than conflicted. My two cents, for my uninformed, ignorant opinion, is there seem to be some people that benefit from ivermectin as a treatment for COVID. There seem to be, like, there's doctors that swear by it. There's people that swore by it. There's the stories of people that were getting sicker and sicker, got ivermectin, and were good. Like, I get it's anecdotal. I'm not arguing that. But I just say, all right, well, it appears that for some reason, some people really can stand to benefit from ivermectin. And there's some that don't. So I feel like that should have been what was investigating is, well, what's the difference? Why are some people benefiting and some people not? And then we kept getting studies about ivermectin where it was given too late, given in the wrong dosage, given improperly. And you're going, guys, you're studying the wrong thing. And that's where my conspiratorial radar went off of, huh, wait a minute. What's going on here? Why are you asking the wrong question and then producing it as evidence? Why are you studying the incorrect thing? Why are you doing it intentionally wrong and then broadcasting that as evidence that it doesn't work? That doesn't sit right with me. Why would we be doing this? So all along, my two cents was virtually no risk to it. Some people seem to benefit, and not everybody, but some people. And even if it was just the placebo effect of, if you got somebody who really believes ivermectin, and whether you want to acknowledge it or not, the placebo effect is real. It's insane that it's real, but it's real, and people get actually better when they get placebos very often. So what was the risk to allowing doctors who wanted to, and in consultation with their patients, prescribe the safest drug that's ever been developed? Like, what was the downside to that? Well, it didn't work. Neither did the shots, neither did remdesivir, neither did a lot of the stuff that we did. You didn't have a problem with that, even though the side effects of remdesivir are horrifying. But ivermectin with no real known significant side effects gets vilified as this awful, evil drug. And instead, we want to jam remdesivir, which was deemed too dangerous for cancer
patients. Mr. Fusong, there is not a patent on ivermectin, so nobody can make any money.
I don't want to get to that point, but
I'm just saying.
It can't be all coincidence that is what we got. So again, I think our stance overall was, look, I'm not telling you that you should or shouldn't take ivermectin or that should be the standard of care. We're not doctors. But the idea that you're banning it, there's something wrong with that. That doesn't. If a doctor thinks that this off-brand thing will work for this particular patient and there's zero risk to giving them this drug, what are we doing? And that's what never sat right. I had this argument with a guy I went to high school who became a doctor, but I think it was about hydroxychloroquine. And I was like, hey, and he was very anti. I said, okay, that's fine that you don't want to give it, but why is the FDA telling you you can or you can't? That's what I don't grasp. It's not their place. He said, well, there's always the risk of side effects. I said, all right, Colin, you've been a doctor a while. Are you aware of anybody anywhere in the world who's ever had a severe negative reaction to hydroxychloroquine when it's given in proper dosage? And he goes, no. Okay, so again, if you don't want to give it, that's your discretion as a doctor. If this doctor over here disagrees with you, we should trust her or his discretion as well and go for it.
Yeah. Don't we have something called second opinions?
Usually, yes, a lot of people offer them. And again, first do no harm. Fine. We don't know if this works or not. And especially back then, we didn't know, but there was very promising results out of India and out of some other countries that were like, oh, well, they're getting much better results. And the biggest distinction we see is that they are using ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, and we're not. That's like the primary difference. Now, there's health issues. There's the obesity rate in India is much lower than it is in America. There's different access to healthcare. There's different metrics. I get all that. There's confounding statures, features, whatever. But what's the risk? Virtually zero. And why are we saying no? Like, why can't we just say, look, if you want to try, we have no opinion on it. It doesn't look like it works to us. Yeah. We don't recommend it, but do what you want.
Yeah, and just wrapping this up, the settlement now, what Pierre Corey was alluding to is that they were scared of discovery, not going to happen, right? So there is some escape hatch kind of feeling with this for the FDA, and they kind of get out of Dodge without really having to kind of be held accountable for any of the things that you just laid out. So it's unfortunate. I mean, I guess I'm glad they settled. They seem to be happy. The doctors seem to be happy about the settlement, but as somebody who doesn't really have too much skin in the game, I guess it would have been interesting to see it play out, even if it did take months or whatever, just to know if the FDA was, playing on the up and up, or were they just being stupid? So, I don't know. So we're going to miss out on that, but
that was my favorite question of the pandemic to all of the governing bodies and controlling interests of, like, are you completely incompetent or are you corrupt? Whatever one you want is fine. I'll let you be it. But you just tell me.
Yeah, because it's impossible to be.
It can't be anywhere else. You're either completely wrong or on the take. Whichever one you want to be, I'll go with it. So you just tell me which one it is.
All right.
Those were fun times.
Yeah. Let me remind everybody to like the video, share the video, and subscribe to the channel. So, never really thought we were going to be talking about squatters' rights here on the show, but here we are.
What an insane concept squatters' rights is, right. Legally speaking.
Yes.
Sorry.
So, as somebody who
leaves your values house for a month at a time.
Well, that too. I was thinking about that. I'm like, good thing I have somebody coming in and check my house, because, every once in a while, who knows? It is. So, but like, I, as the libertarian in me, is very values property rights as something that is
libertarian,
very
principle.
Libertarian, yeah. So, borderline sacred, if you will. So, all this comes as, I can't imagine anywhere that anybody reads this where like, oh, that seems legit. You know what I mean? Like, who was agreeing with the squatters in this cigar? So let me read some headlines to you folks from home here. So if you're not aware.
So excited.
This is from the New York Post, dated March 19th. Fed up homeowner arrested after tense standoff with squatters stealing $1 million house she inherited from her parents. So this lady, her mom dies, or her parents die or whatever, inherited this $1 million house. She's not there. Some squatters take up roost in the fucking house, and she tries to get them out, and the police come and arrest her
for changing the locks.
What a heathen. I mean, just the very notion that the police had to show up there and arrest the homeowner and not the squatters is such a clown world thing that it's everybody should be like, okay, there's something wrong in the system if this is actually what's going down.
So, I think if I understand the facts of this particular case correctly, they didn't invoke squatters' rights. What they did is they basically said, we are a tenant with a lease. And she said, no, you're not. And the New York State rule is, if the person claims to be a tenant, it's a matter that has to go before a judge. So all they have to do is claim it, even though you as the homeowner are going, you're not a tenant. So they get to stay in the house pending trial. Now, the lawyers who work for these free legal services and tenants' rights attorneys know their client has no basis, so they just delay. They drag it out. They let it go on for, the client will produce some nonsensical lease that they claim that they have signed.
And let me interject right here. They're going to do that for how many days? 30 days. Want to know why? Because in New York City, anyone can simply claim squatter's rights after 30 days of living at a home. When the 30-day mark comes, it is illegal to change the locks, remove tenants, or turn off the utilities.
Because now they have squatter's rights as a tenant. Now they don't get to own the house, but they get the right of access to the house for how long?
I think that it would have to
go through
some legal process.
Right. So, like, there's no good way. I don't know how you could view New York State's policy on this and as a good thing, like as a net positive.
Do you know if that's a New York City policy or a New York State policy?
I believe it's actually city. I know I said state, but I believe it's only city.
I wondered. I don't know.
But the state can't be that different. It's not like New York City's super blue and the state itself is kind of like a little bit more red. Like it's all leaning in that direction. So the idea behind squatters' rights, actually, from a libertarian principle, makes somewhat of sense. Whoever's making use of the private property should be the one entitled. So if you have an actual abandoned property that you're not using, now, there's other states where the rule is 20 years. If you live there for 20 years unencumbered, you have a legal right to the property because you're making actual positive use out of it. I don't know if that's right, but it's closer to being right than New York City. New York City, like 30 days, done. And my opinion is if you want to solve this problem, number one, start with the attorneys that if you knowingly present false evidence, like if you know that this lease is nonsense and you present it anyway, you could be disbarred. You want to get people to straighten up real quick, that's how you do it. Because no lawyer's touching it at that point. And I get it, lawyers have a, you know, duty to represent their clients, but you're also not allowed as a lawyer to present knowingly false evidence. You're also not allowed to do this exact type of stuff. So if all they're doing is kicking a delay down the road to keep your person in a house they shouldn't be entitled to in the first place, I don't understand how that's justice. It's not.
Yeah, well, thankfully, vigilantes... What?
Who could have seen this coming?
Tried to evict squatters at $1 million Queen home. So... We had some vigilantes out on the prowl, basically removing squatters from this very house that you're talking about here. So
is this the one? They didn't like actually remove them. They just started going in and like took the door off the hinges. They were taking windows out of the house. Like they just went through and made the house unlivable for the people that were trying to live in it.
Yeah.
Which is actually brilliant from I didn't change the locks. I took the whole door.
Yeah.
You can get in.
And so I bring this up as a segment because we also have, I don't know if I can remove this.
That's weird.
Kipps Bay Squatters killed Nadia Vitels. So this is a lady who was, how do I get rid of this? Apparently
I got faith in
apparently
you.
I got to be a subscriber to do this. But so a mom found dead in a duffel bag by her son. After she showed up to her mother's house and squatters were there and they killed her. So this is not just like some innocent, like I'm hanging out and, you know, using your kitchen because I'm hungry kind of thing. Like, you don't know what you're walking into. And this person didn't even know people were there, is my understanding. You know, she wasn't like, she didn't know there were squatters at the place. She just showed up unannounced at her own house and was killed for it. So I'm assuming that all of
these people are crazy.
Yeah. I mean, this seems like an extension of the clown world, right? Like, yeah. This is just like a symptom of the, we got to do everything right by the whatevers. And this is the basically outcome of craziness.
When you legislate from the perspective that poor people are all inherently good and rich people are all inherently evil, you get this kind of result where it's just not a good place to start from.
All right. So, I don't know. Hopefully the state takes up some kind of, or at least the city maybe will.
It's going to be people that are going to keep doing this vigilante stuff. Right. Because, look, honestly, I would join it if somebody came in here and took your house while you were in Florida for a month. No problem. We'll take the door off the hinges. We'll remove the windows.
Thank you.
We'll do all this stuff. We'll make the house basically less appealing to the squatters. I will lock them out. I'm not doing anything illegal. But you own the house. You give me permission. Cool. I'll take your door off the hinges for you. I'll take the back door off. I got skills. I can do it.
Like I said, hopefully they can just, if they can move 30 days to 20 years or closer to that, then, you know, maybe problem solved or at least somewhat deterred.
I get the argument for 20 years of if you abandon a property for 20 years and somebody else is making better use, there's a societal good that you could
do.
Yeah. What is the possible argument for 30 days?
Yeah, there is none. Other than just placating criminals.
Other than rich people are bad, poor people are good, so we have to help the poor people at the expense of the rich.
Right.
And God forbid you own a house or inherit one from your parents. Now you're rich? Like, come on. That's crazy talk.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about Julian Assange a little bit here. So back in February, for those who don't know, Julian Assange in jail for, or in jail, being held for something like 14 years now straight because the U.S. Is trying to extradite him here to prosecute him for treason or spying or some shit. So turns out, shortly after the Australian government, the home of Julian Assange, made a request to the U.S. Government and the U.K. government, I guess, to drop charges against Assange. It leaked out that, this is from the Wall Street Journal reporting, that the DOJ here in the grand old United States of America may have been in discussions and considering a plea deal with Julian Assange, something where he would plead guilty to mishandling classified information, which is a misdemeanor.
Okay.
Seemingly, if this was true and the plea deal is accepted as a misdemeanor, it would be time served and he would walk out of that embassy, I feel like, the next day, if not that day, right? So now, as you can read the headline here, despite Wall Street Journal reporting, Julian Assange's lawyer says no indication of plea deal. So this would have to come from Merrick Garland, I'm assuming. Yeah. There seems to be no indication to the lawyers of Julian Assange that that is imminent anyway, but I would call it encouraging that there seems to be some movement on this topic or freeing of Julian Assange, which again is basically he's been in prison for 14 years for the crime of conducting journalism. Two things. If he accepts the plea deal, and again, he walks out, I'm assuming if I was in him, I would take the plea deal and walk out that day if that was the case for a misdemeanor. Do you think, and this is, again, not for me to really decide because it's Julian Assange's life, but is him pleading to this mishandling of classified information, will that affect future media journalism, investigative journalism into things of national security because they risk the Julian Assange treatment, right? So I don't know. I mean, I don't know. What's your take? I mean, I'm of the opinion that, I mean, obviously this is, I'm not Julian Assange again, but like he should just take the deal if he's going to be able to walk out that day. I feel like,
yeah,
like get him out and let's get some real health, you know, evaluation and get him on the go here. So do I think that there could be some kind of chilling effect on reporting on national security issues because of it? Absolutely. So it's bittersweet, I guess, if you will.
Sure.
But I feel like this is progress.
I think it's, if I'm in his shoes, I probably would plead to, I wouldn't plead to a felony. I would probably plead to a misdemeanor though, just to have this be over. Now there's a part of me that like looks at this as if there was no human cost and no suffering and say, no, stand up and fight because you're right. What you did was not, you're not a U.S. citizen. You don't owe anything to the United States government. You got handed it and you reported it the way any reporter would. And now you got targeted because what you exposed is the stuff the government really didn't want people to know about. Because it was awful. So I don't want to give the government any kind of a win on this. However, I'm also a pragmatic human being and say, look, you've basically been in prison for 10 years over something that should never have been in prison for.
Yeah.
And therefore, yes. I think it makes sense at that point of take your plea, take your misdemeanor. You've already done more than enough in this fight. It's more than anybody could have asked of you. The suffering has been way more than anything he deserved. Take it and go.
Yeah, it's a, I mean, even if he walks out today, it's been a tragedy. I mean,
right.
It's like a world tragedy too. So like, yeah. it's not something, I mean, it's, again, he's an Australian citizen being held captive by our government through a third party embassy without even being having charges brought against him. So it's
crazy.
It's a miscarriage of justice, say the least. So
right, it's a travesty of justice. Yeah. There is no justice involved in this. Yeah.
All right, Mr. Huesong. Let's talk Donald J. Trump. Quite a day for Mr. Donald J. Trump here. So as I'm guessing everybody who's listening knows, today was a deadline for Trump to post a $464 million bond to satisfy a judgment against him by the state of New York and Attorney General Letitia James. as just right we were going onto the air, the appellate court has decided that Donald J. Trump will have 10 more days to post a bond, and the bond now is only $175 million. It seems as though that is in Mr. Trump's wheelhouse of execution, and we'll probably post that sometime this week.
Sure.
So no seizing of Trump Tower or the golf courses or whatever, all the other houses that he has. So that's everybody was salivating that they were going to seize Trump Tower.
Oh, God.
So that's not going to happen. I mean, I think we both agree that the $464 million, which was some $300-something million plus interest number, was nothing more than legal travesty. Again, we'll just use that word. So a win for Trump. His assets are untouched.
For now.
For now. I mean, I think the, and we'll get into the Truth Social thing here in a little bit, that he's going to have enough resources to accommodate any whatevers going forward. So, and I guess we should bring up, and I'll let you go from there. We also were supposed to get a trial date, and I'll check Twitter real quick to see if they have posted such a thing, but they were actually, Trump was in court this morning in the hush money. Did you know, on a quick side here, but related, did you know that in the, I think in the 90s or 2000s, that Wicked Productions, which is a production of adult home movies, came out with trading cards?
No.
And that Stormy Daniels trading card is now worth like $150, $200. So all you folks out there who have those boxes of Wicked porn cards sitting in your shelves and shoeboxes, go rifle through them, find your Stormy Daniels, put it on eBay.
Maybe do it under an anonymous account, because I don't know anybody's going to want to claim to having Wicked porn star cards.
I mean, they're out there. So you can just say you got them at an estate sale. Who knows?
There you go. I mean? Was thrifting.
Yes.
Old pervert had these.
I found a Liberator at a thrift store.
Okay.
Do you know what a Liberator is?
Yes.
Oh, I posted it. Okay.
Yes.
It's an adult sex toy. shaped like a wedge for anybody who's playing at home. In a thrift store. Used.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the kind of thing you want to buy used.
No.
How much sanitizing?
I mean,
never mind. We're going down a bad road here.
Yeah, and I mean, they're out there used on eBay for a couple hundred dollars. Like, they're literally, there's a demand for them. Kind of like there's a demand for used undergarments.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's not right.
So there's a black market, if you will, for used stuff, bedroom stuff.
I mean,
I thought it was funny that the Liberator labeled themselves bedroom adventure gear. That's exciting.
I like it. It's a good name for it.
we're down a bad path.
Yeah, we got off subject there.
But.
So the judge did refuse to push the trial off.
So we got an April trial.
So I think it's April trial.
April trial, supposedly. I think they were shooting for April 15th. Whatever, we'll see. April trial and the hush money trial, which I think most, if you will, legal experts assume that it's the least serious of the crimes. This is the alleged Donald J. Trump paid his lawyer at the time, Michael Cohen, to pay off Stormy Daniels about keeping a story silent or whatever. And obviously it wasn't silent anyway. It came out. But that was supposedly some diversion of campaign funds. And that's the hush money, supposedly. And Alvin Bragg, again, is trying to make a name for himself. I think all this is going to and has, from the beginning, backfired on these people, and you know,
spectacularly.
Yeah, I mean, when I'm considering voting for this guy, it's when not worked.
Something went off. Yeah, something went off the rails. If they're getting you to think about voting for Donald Trump, who I believe you colloquially refer to as a rapey piece of shit.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So let's go. The Stormy. Now, number one, let's go to the fraud case first with Tish James. Go get him, Tish. This is the most nonsensical, insane criminal case I have ever even seen. And the fact that she thought of it and was not immediately laughed out of the room to say, like, you're insane, there's no way, it means New York State is broken. Like, the idea that the attorney general for the state of New York was like, you know what we're going to do? I'm going to get him for fraud, for overestimating the value of his real estate. Like, okay, did he default on a loan? Did he not pay somebody back? Like, oh, no, he paid them all back. Oh, so what are the damages going to be? because they did this for him, they didn't give it to a small business owner. You understand that under the terms and legal definition of fraud, that's not actual injury, right? Like, he didn't owe the small businessman over the next county any sort of duty. So how are you going to make this work? She's like, calm down, I got it. And sure enough, when you get a judge to agree that Mar-a-Lago is worth $18 million, maybe 35, I'm sorry. The bank, was it Credit Suisse? Credit Suisse?
Deutsche Bank, I think.
Deutsche Bank, one of them. This is the funniest part of all of this. They don't do loans to small businesses. Like, their minimum commercial loan is $100 million. I own a small business. I've looked into properties to buy for my small business. You know what's not in our wheelhouse? A $100 million loan. It ain't happening anytime soon. I don't think we're getting 1% of that on a loan, to be perfectly honest with you. So I don't think that the people like me were overly hurt by Donald Trump's $200 million loan that he repaid in full with interest. And also, the bank, the other party to the transaction, testified on behalf of Trump at trial.
Yeah, they got paid. They were happy with the transaction.
They'll do it again, obviously. Yeah. And they, again, everybody who's ever done any type of, look, mortgage, bank loan, commercial loan, personal loan, I don't care what it is, you sign a thing that says, give us your best estimate, but we're not looking at that. We're going to look into it on our own. And everybody knows that. That's how it's done. Now, look, if you want to say that Mar-a-Lago, he claimed it was worth $500 million, but in reality it was only worth $250 million, okay, fine. But you're gonna have some fluctuation. At the same time, the idea that Mar-a-Lago was only worth at most $35 million is the most comically insane thing I've ever heard in my entire life. This is the equivalent of, let's say you have a house that you bought for $150,000. Now, the real estate market's been insane. So now your $150,000 house, you could probably sell it for somewhere between $250,000 and $300,000. That's what you think. So you're like, all right, I'm going to take out a home equity line of credit. I got to go and get some money. And the bank asks you, well, what's your house worth? And you say, $300,000. Now,
did you
overestimate? Maybe. Because it could only be worth $250,000. Let's say you went nuts and you said, I think it might be worth $350,000. Okay. Then the bank's going to look at it and they're going to go, your house isn't worth $350,000. At most, it's worth $300,000. You owe $100,000. You have $200,000. 80% is $160,000. You're entitled. We'll give you a home equity line of credit up to $160,000. You're like, okay, fine. Now, the state can't come later on and be like, you overestimated the value of your property. And you know what we're going to determine the value of the property is? The $150,000 that you assessed that you pay taxes on. And you're going, whoa. There's no way my house is only worth $150,000. It might not be worth $350,000, but it's worth at least $250,000. And they're like, shut up, criminal. The bank could have loaned to somebody else, but instead they loaned to you. Now, never mind the fact that the banking requirement for reserves is now zero. So, number one, it has no impact on how they loan out money, because I can go deposit $10,000 tomorrow. They can loan that $10,000 to you the next day and then loan it to somebody else on the same day. And it doesn't matter because they're not required to keep any of the bank money on hand. That's a fun, terrifying problem that we're all going to have to reckon with at some point, but not today. The idea that you would charge somebody for fraud when there was no damages, and the both parties of the transaction had mutual benefit is nuts. The idea that you have a judge who decided on a whim that Mar-a-Lago, that any property for any human being was worth the tax assessed value instead of the market value is laughably insane. And then the notion that the governor of the state of New York, the wonderful, intelligent, rational, and articulate Kathy Hochul, had to issue a statement to other real estate developers. It was like, whoa, everybody calm down. We're not doing this to everybody. Don't worry. New York's a great place to continue investing in real estate. You don't have to worry about us doing this to you or looking into your properties.
But Mr. Hussong, he committed fraud. He should be held accountable.
There are requirements to the legal definition of fraud.
Listen,
you need an actual injury.
If you or me did this exact same thing, we would be in jail.
Let me ask you a question, Sean, in that regard. Has anybody looked into, like, let's say, the past 75 years of all the criminal statutes involving fraud and then looked to see how many other times in the past 75 years anybody was charged and found guilty of fraud when there was no victim?
By chance, I can't give you the 75 years, but 70 years, the Associated Press went back 70 years and found that in all civil fraud cases where there was no victim, exactly like the case that we have been talking about here for the last 10 minutes, zero assets have been seized in regards to those cases over 70 years. Zero with a capital Z.
Will knock me over with a feather.
Yeah. So for all those folks at home playing the gotta play by the rules, that like clearly this is a once in a lifetime. This is a witch hunt, right? I mean, they needed a crime. They found the crime.
This is like the very textbook definition of selective prosecution. This is something that goes on forever, and everybody knows this goes on. Now, if you're one of these like, well, everybody's got to play by the rules, like you don't do real estate. Because I got news for you. This isn't even that bad compared to what other people do on real estate transaction that just gets allowed and gets to be pushed through. This wasn't anything terrible. My favorite was CNN came out, and they're like, well, how's he going to pay the judgment? And somebody was like, I can sell property. Mar-a-Lago that the judge deemed worth $30 million. He could sell that for $250 million at a minimum, and that could cover the bond. And I'm sitting there laughing hysterically of, without a shred of irony, without the slightest bit of irony, you guys are saying this with a straight face. And nobody's going, well, wait a minute, if Mar-a-Lago is actually worth that, how is it only worth $20 million 5 years ago? How's that possible? Well, I guess it was more than 5 years ago, but you get my point. It's like we don't think things through whatsoever. And I can't stand that side of it. I can't stand that nobody thinks things through. I can't stand that just because Donald Trump sucks, all the rules get thrown out, all the norms get thrown out, and you can do whatever you want because Donald Trump's a bad person. Like, that's not how a system of justice operates. It is equal justice under the law, whether you are a saint or a sinner, a great human being, or a piece of shit. You are entitled to equal protection under the law. You don't get to selectively go after some people but not others, because that's clearly and inherently a miscarriage of justice by any definition of the word. And yes, I wish we had a more sympathetic person that it was happening to, because having sympathy for Donald Trump's about as difficult as having sympathy for Hillary Clinton. You just can't get it.
Yeah, it's uncomfortable.
You can't get there. But you can look at this rationally and go, yeah, there's no way this is correct. There's no way. Like, he has a legitimate complaint. Stop giving me reasons to sympathize with Donald Trump. I don't want to. Just, there's so many things that you could legitimately investigate him for, so many things to legitimately criticize him for, and you guys keep going after the most insane avenues known to man. I don't understand why.
And then we have Truth Social, Mr. Hewsong.
Oh, God help
me. The get-out-of-jail-free card, kind of.
Oh, God help me.
So I purposely pulled up NBC News for this headline. Trump's social media company will go public in a merger that could net the cash-strapped ex-president $3 billion, with a B, billion dollars. The vote comes 2.5 years after Digital World Acquisition Corp. announced plans to merge with the Trump Media and Technology Group, the private firm that owns Truth Social platform. So I don't use Truth Social. I don't know anybody who does. I mean, I've been on there, but like, I don't think it's all that good.
I've never been on it, so I have no idea.
So I don't know that it's successful or whatnot. I don't know.
My regards to Mike Lindell. I'm not getting Truth Social.
I don't know how the world of acquisitions and valuations and all that stuff works. You probably have a better handle of it than I do, but in this regard, whatever. So when this, now, apparently Trump can't sell any stock for like 6 months on this, but everybody knows he has that, right? I mean, right. So I'm guessing this is going to allow him to work out any cash deal needed to be worked out. Like, he's going to have the resources to cover anything. Now, I purposely went and looked at the left mainstream media, if you will, news coverage of this to try to see what their angle was.
Yeah.
And their angle is that the True Social is just a embezzlement, like a fundraising arm of the campaign, and that people are donating $5 billion here and $5 billion there into this company, therefore raising the value of the company and therefore enriching Donald Trump as a campaign contribution through this digital acquisition, I guess.
So it's Trump's version of the Clinton Foundation.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I don't know enough about it to kind of any of that, but like, you know, their claim was that, you know, the PIF, the the Saudis can come in and just buy up shares and therefore inflate whatever. And who knows? It could be other people too, right? So Mike Lindell or whoever else has $1 billion who wants to kind of buy this True Social stuff. But the timing of it just couldn't be better for the whole craziness of the story. I mean, to where, you know, he's going to get this huge windfall because of this failing media app that looks like doesn't work. And here he is, you know, it's going to be the get out of jail free card on top of the, you know, the appellate decision.
All right. So here's where I come down on it. I don't know a ton about the valuation of this company. It's entirely plausible that he is using it as a, you know, personal slush fund. Now, here's the flip side, and maybe nobody's considered this yet. The other reason that it could be worth, you know, a couple of billion dollars is maybe this includes the Trump NFTs and the gold sneakers. I mean, you get to a couple of billion there, obviously, because who doesn't want Trump NFTs and gold Trump shoes?
I mean, would you rather have a Trump NFT or a Stormy Daniels rookie?
Can I have neither?
No,
I'm good. I'm perfectly fine with neither of those things ever being in my possession.
Now, I know, rookie cards, high value.
I don't want to talk about this anymore. So, but in all seriousness, all right, look, this is where I mean about there is stuff you could legitimately investigate Donald Trump for. This is one of them. You could actually look into, all right, well, are the Saudis having undue influence by funneling money into his organization? Here's the problem. The media, the oversight of the bureaucracy of our government and generally the people at large have abdicated that responsibility for 40 years. That we know that politicians do this and we have not investigated it. There's been zero consequences to anybody for having done this. All right. Like we know that the Clinton Foundation was used as a slush fund for the Clinton family and a way to buy influence and peddle influence. And nobody wanted to raise a finger about it. We know that Dick Cheney was giving government contracts to companies that he owns significant shares in. Nobody did anything about it. I don't know if Bush did the same thing, but probably. We know that Barack Obama got out of office and somehow immediately was able to afford a $28 million mansion on Martha's Vineyard, which, by the way, if you're thinking sea levels are going to rise 10 feet in 10 years, you don't buy a house on Martha's Vineyard, but that's neither here nor there.
He had a private chef.
Had. Yeah. That dude, poor bastard. It's like Ted Kennedy came to visit. Anyways, we know that this all happened. Like, this isn't new. And then Biden went over as the VP to China, and his son got a $1 billion investment in a hedge fund. We are seeing with the Tony Bobulinski testimony, if you care to look at it, which most people don't, that they had an entire setup of LLCs and basically a money laundering operation to take money from foreign countries and utilize it for the benefit of Biden and his family. And, you know, 10% always went to the big guy. It's right in the email. And they've got it, like, the amount of proof they have against Joe Biden is mind-blowing compared to what they have against Donald Trump. But they're investigating that, kind of. The Republicans are. And only because it's Joe Biden, because if it was Donald Trump, they'd have no interest. The media is not looking into it. The media is basically covering it up. Hunter's laptop. Now, Russian disinformation, based according to 51 intelligence experts and every legacy media personality in the world, saying, nothing to see here, that's all fake. That's Russian disinformation. And people went along because people are ultimately sheep who have their side and that's all they want to know. So I've said the same thing about Donald Trump basically since he got in, and there were some things that he was doing that I was very concerned about. Of look, if this is the new standard that you want to hold all politicians to, I am in. 100% in. If you want to start impeaching people over this kind of stuff, I am on board. Let's hold these people accountable. Let's get rid of this presidential immunity and let's start holding former presidents accountable for the things they did. I'm in. I think it's a great idea. The problem is I know you're not serious and I know you're not going to be consistent. And as soon as it's no longer Donald Trump, you are no longer going to do this. And that, as much as I dislike the guy, is not a fair way of distributing justice. You cannot make special rules because this one guy you dislike so much. You can't do that. That is not fair. And again, saint, sinner, altruist, piece of shit. Everybody is entitled to play by the same rules, in my humble opinion. Now, maybe I'm an idealist. I get it. But I'm not making special exceptions. I'm not going to support special exceptions or special rules for this one guy. Especially because, comparatively speaking, his transgressions as a public office official, as a public official, were relatively minor compared to some of the other ones. So if you're gonna like, you're gonna look the other way on murder on one hand, and then you want to go for petty theft on the other, like, no. Either go after everything or go after nothing. I hope you go after everything, but please spare me the pontificating in your moral high ground about how the Trump supporters are just, they'll listen to anything their dear leader says. Like, no, some will, for sure. Like, Trump devotion system seems to be a very real situation. But so is Trump derangement system, where anything you hear negative about the guy, you automatically believe despite any evidence to the contrary. It doesn't matter. If it's bad for Donald Trump, you wholesale believe it with zero exception. And all I'm asking for is, well, wait a minute. If they are using Truth Social in this way, how is that any different than the Clintons using the Clinton Foundation to fly private jets all over the world in the name of philanthropy? How is it different?
They're saving Haiti, Mr. Huzong.
Oh, yeah. Bang up job they did on that one. It's always great to see cannibal gangs running over a country. Like, oh, I know it's nonsensical, but the fact that we got there was just wild. And the fact that they let Haiti get to that point is insane. So I have a hard time getting there on any of this of, all right, Trump, God bless him. I've never seen any human being benefit more from the stupidity of his enemies than Donald Trump. It's unfathomable how stupid the people coming after him always seem to be. Fannie Willis, Tish James, Stormy Daniels,
Alvin Bragg,
Joe Biden, like the dumbest people in the collection of society ever are the ones coming after this guy tooth and nail. And it's like, oh, I mean, God.
That's to the benefit of Donald J. Trump.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable how stupid these people are. But the problem is, like, if you're Joe Biden, what allegation can you make against Donald Trump that you're not guilty of? You had sexual assault allegations, and then you've got, oh, I've blanked on her name.
Tara Reid.
Tara Reid. Then you got Tara Reid coming out, and everybody's like, yeah, happened. Like, oh, so we're not doing that believe all women thing anymore? Like, oh, no, I believe her, but I still want Joe Biden. Like, good Lord. Okay. You've got, well, he's very inappropriate comments about his daughter. Go ahead.
What?
What's Biden's thing?
Inappropriate showers with his daughter?
Interesting that we just gloss over that. All right, great. You've got, oh, well, Jared Kushner took a $2 billion investment in his hedge from the Saudis. Okay, Hunter Biden took a $1 billion investment from the Chinese while his dad was still vice president. You've got the Burisma scandal, which even if you want to tell me it's fully on the up and up. So the vice president of the United States, who is the point person on all Ukrainian policy, gets his son, or I'm sorry, I shouldn't say get. God knows Joe Biden did nothing wrong. Happens. It just so happens that his son ends up on the board of directors for the largest energy company that's sort of quasi state and private run in the country, and for his expertise in energy, corporate governance, Ukraine overall, ethical standards. I don't know what the hell they're paying him for, but he gets paid four times what ExxonMobil pays their board members. And we all know ExxonMobil is the pinnacle of corporate ethics. So that's probably not a fair one. It's not like they just bribe people on their board. But Burisma did it to the tune of $83,000 per month. That's insane. Like, anything that you could throw at him, there's a Biden story that's waiting there to be exposed that is somehow always worse. Somehow. And the evidence is always far more clear. Classified documents. Oh, Trump took classified documents and he locked them in a storage container or a closet at Mar-a-Lago. Like, all right, our current president took them as the vice president and had them in a rotting box in his garage next to his car and gave them to a ghostwriter for his book. Like, this is a... If you're trying to prove a case, you just prove the entire case against Biden on there. Like, he had them, he knew he had them, or should have known he had them, and he shared them with somebody who didn't have a clearance. All right, so again, do I think Joe Biden should go to jail for that? No, I don't. But if you're going to tell me Donald Trump should, then Joe Biden has to. Like, that's the consistency I'm looking for.
Yeah.
That's it. If you're going to go after one, you got to go after the other one. I'm sorry, but that's just the rules. And you guys want to change the rules, and I can't get on board.
Yeah. Well, 2024 off to a rocking start.
God help me.
We didn't even talk. Do you think there will be a new speaker by the next show?
Not by the next show, but it's definitely coming.
You see your girl, MTG, submitted a... Marjorie Taylor
I had to think
Green.
Of who that was. Oh, I yeah. got it now.
It's not Magic the Gathering.
I didn't think it was.
Yeah.
You dork. All right, let's go.
That's the thrifting part of me coming out, unfortunately. But she filed the, she didn't file it with privilege, so she can, so if you file a privilege, then they have to vote on it within 48 hours. So she filed the motion to vacate the chair, but didn't file with privilege. So it could die at any time, but anytime she could just wield it and just awesome. Take them out. So,
I mean, look, the idea that he wants to waive the 72 hour rule is like, buddy, this is the, like, this yeah. is what they want. They, the idea that it's unreasonable that for a legislator to think they're entitled to 3 days to read through 1,000 pages of legal writing.
Yeah.
Like, this is a proposed law. This is a budget. This is whatever. This is the omnibus. And it's 1,000 pages long, and I want you to vote on this in the best interest of your constituents. And I go, here you go. It's about this thick, and I slide it across. You're like, all right, just give me, like, 3 days. And I go, you got 2 hours, and then I need your vote. Think about how long a 500-page book is. How many of you have ever actually sat down and read a 500-page book? Now double that, and you have 1 day. And it's not like it's creative storytelling. It's all legal mumbo-jumbo. It's all legal jargon. 1 day. Don't worry. They're acting in our best interest for sure. So the notion that
you'll
it's
find out when they what's in the bill when you after you vote for it, Mr. Gusong.
Oh, my God. Still the dumbest, least long, the dumbest quote I've ever read. You got to pass it to see what's in it.
You know what was in the omnibus bill?
What was in the omnibus bill?
The National Extreme Risk Protection Order Resource Center will provide our partners across the country with valuable resources to keep firearms out of the hands of individuals who pose threat to themselves or others. So a red flag resource center. Merrick Garland made that announcement like 3 minutes after they passed the omnibus bill. I think it was in it.
God.
Think there'll be World War III before next show?
Oh, my. No. Well, no, I don't.
But which one do you think is going to happen first? Replacing of the Speaker Johnson or World War III?
Johnson gets out first. That's definitely what's happening. But World War III is way closer than anybody wants to acknowledge.
It's literally. So in 100 years from now, when they look back and they're like, when did World War III start? It's already happened. It was, whatever date that it's before today.
I don't really disagree. And the idea that European countries, and this is why I hate politicians so much, all this tough talk, all of this like, oh, well, we got to stand up and we got to do this. Like, you first. Oh, no. Okay. So you want me to go die? Hard pass. I'm so sorry. But if you're not willing to, and then I tell you I'm not willing to, how does that make me the bad person? The only difference is you're willing to go send me, and I'm not willing to go send anybody else to die in my stead. So somehow you have the moral high ground? Somebody make this make sense to me.
Nothing. It's a clown world, Mr. Hussong.
Like, oh, my
Nothing
goodness.
Makes sense. If it makes sense, it's wrong.
Lindsey Graham over here going to talk to me about how I lack the intestinal fortitude. Like, dude.
Leave Ladyboy Graham alone.
Oh, my God. Just get out of here and go jump on a chopper. I can't stand that guy.
All right, so no World War III, no vacating of the speaker for the second time.
I don't think so. Not yet. It'll happen. I don't think he's popular enough. I don't think he's good enough.
Okay, so do you think the next speaker will be a Republican or Hakeem Jeffries?
It's a fair question. Fair question. I don't know.
I really don't know either.
I mean, the Republicans.
Have you seen these congressmen who are like resigning?
Yeah.
After their special election deadline, so that they can't be replaced, and therefore
it's
just
super weird.
Yeah, it's.
This is uniparty 101.
That's uniparty tactic 101, no doubt.
Yeah, so that's unfortunate, and like this is where
they should just move to expel that dude, Mike Gallagher or whatever. Just get rid of him now.
That's why my neighbor always likes to laugh because I say this all the time when we'll have people who don't know me very well and. We'll start discussing politics, and it's my go-to line whenever they're like, oh, so you want this one or this one? It's like, oh, you think there's a difference? It's adorable. It's so cute. Like, yeah, you think that the Democrats are the good guys or the Republicans are the bad, whatever else. It's adorable that you think anybody gives a shit about you.
Yeah.
Like, any one of these people would sell you into poverty if it meant they could guarantee a win in the next election. And please don't ever think it wouldn't.
In a second, so. All righty, well. Another wonderful array of topics broken down and discussed and digested for the folks here at the episode 154. So I guess we'll do it all again next week.
Can't wait.
All right. Well, until next Monday, we thank you all for watching us pontificate, and basically it's more of a itch scratching for me, like just getting shit off my chest more than anything else.
It's cheaper than therapy.
You're a sounding board. Yeah. So thank you. But on that note, we will see you all again next Monday for episode 155 of Sports, Clicks, and Politics.